welcome to Heavy Matters Podcast, episode 42, where myself and Vanny are going to be talking about some very different albums today. Or they're not different, but they are in a way. You'll find out why. Hello, mate. How are you? We've been busy recently, haven't we?
Yeah, we're slightly unusually recording during daylight hours. It's normally in the deep of night when we're recording. So this is quite a novel experience.
It is novel. You're right. Yeah, absolutely.
Have you got Guinness this time of day?
No, unfortunately not. I wish. I'm back to work. I'm on my lunch break, so I'm going to record this, then head back after.
Lovely.
But on this week's show, we have albums from Between the Buried and Me, Death Heaven, and Wolves in the Throne Room. So, mix of genres there. And first of all, though, Benny has been on his travels. You went to Slam Dunk Festival, mate.
Yeah.
You little teeny bopper.
Yeah, I know. I was just trying to work out the average age of the Slam Dunk audience. And it wasn't as young as I thought. I'd be horrified of a good 20 years older than everyone else there. But it's a good range of ages. Probably I'd say me and friend of the show, Marty Haddock, had a debate on this. But I would say the average age is probably about 30. So you're
well above the average age then.
Oh yeah, that's a given. But I thought I'd be 20 years above the average age, so it's not too bad. But yeah, look, mate, it's not necessarily my bag, Slam Dunk. It's the first time I've ever been. But there was just that allure of going to a festival, being back amongst it. And actually, the lineup on the Empiricon stage, whilst there are a few annoying clashes, there were enough bands to lure me down to Leeds for it.
Mm. And that's your first festival, isn't it, since Download 2 years ago?
Yep. Yeah.
Did it fit in seamlessly?
Oh yeah, it was that similar thing that I said when I reviewed the Speedhorn show, of just it being slightly weird, but actually just completely normal, and there'd be something slightly refreshing about that. It is a one-day festival. They hold it over two sites, north in Leeds and south in Hatfield, just outside London. So it's just a one-dayer, so don't have to have too much stamina to get back into it. And the weather, do you know, the weather was all right. It didn't rain, so it's okay.
And what was the choice of beers on the show?
Ooh, it was Simon Amstel's, which... I reached my limit after a few and had to revert to the Rons, but a good time to have by all. So band wise, Loathe were the first band that we wanted to catch, but unfortunately we didn't make it in time for them, which is gutting. I really want to see them on their new album cycle and I haven't yet. Mm. I think they had some issues at Download and Bloodstock, but were good by all accounts.
I think they pulled out of Bloodstock, mate.
Yeah, exactly. I think there were issues.
Sorry, okay.
There were issues. So, Loathe we missed, unfortunately. And A we missed, which was a bit of a shame. So it was a bit of an annoying clash.
Was it?
The Carter Brothers in action. But first band up, first band in the festival environment was the Mighty Malevolence.
Oh, talk about a baptism of fire.
Oh, yeah. We just got there. We just sunk a big, like, hot dog and fries and two Amstels, and we're barreled straight into the mosh pit with a big, you had to roll me in sideways into that mosh pit. It was joyous. Malevolence, I mean, without detracting from the rest of the review, Malevolence were the band of the day for me. They were the first name on the team sheet when I looked at the lineup and saw them on there. I think they've had, you know, I think they have done also, they've done Download Pilot and Bloodstock, but they were brilliant. They all played all three tracks off the new EP. They brought the absolute fire of tracks like No, It's Keep Your Distance and Self Supremacy, but they also took it down into that, Conan played that beautiful third track off the EP, that real southern tinge, down Pantera-y. It was just a whole crowd roaring along with it. Really emotive, dedicated to one of their mates who I think committed suicide, and just so powerful. That's the other side. So it was great. And look, they sounded great. they have a level of technicality that I think they're not always appreciated for. I think people just think they're a bit of a hate breed band, but the technicality, especially with the drummer, is incredible. And they are, without joking, one of my favorite acts right now.
I think from what I've read from, like you said, Download, Bloodstock, and Slam Dunk, social media, everyone's been going crazy for them. And I think this band are probably, they're going to be really big. They're going to be on big stages, I think, going forward.
Yeah, they've got challenging sound. They're heavy, let's make no bones about it. But I think they have, with that southern swagger, that Pantera feel, I think they do have a little bit of a crossover potential, unlike your common or garden metallic hardcore hate breed style band. Props to them, fingers crossed. Saw plenty of Malevolence t-shirts knocking about.
Lovely. Any other standouts for you?
So Malevolence, I watched Creeper from afar, who were good, but again,
they're not your cup of tea, that Creeper.
No, but critically lauded. I've seen them once or twice before at festivals, but yeah, they were good. Then we had the Impericon stage, blow by blow. First up was Funeral for a Friend, who were a proper nostalgia trip. Brilliant. I used to love them when I was kind of 16, 17.
Benny, sorry to interrupt you. Do you remember when we went to see Maiden on the Dance of Death tour?
Yes, in Cardiff, yeah.
And Funeral for a Friend were supporting. And I don't know if we caught the end of it or not, but I remember seeing their backdrop come down and all the Maiden fans were cheering when it's coming down. And I was like, now look, to be honest, anyone who's supporting Maiden's going to have a tough time. But I remember the cheers. I thought, oh, that's really harsh.
Yeah. No, I used to love Lightning back in the day. And those first two albums for me are great. And to be fair to them, they knew exactly what side their bread was buttered on. They just played back-to-back banger from those first two tracks. Like, they have been releasing albums over the last 20 years, but they knew exactly how to play to the festival crowd. And it was a great set. It was much better than I was anticipating. The tent was overflowing. It was unbelievable.
I can imagine.
So from Funeral Friend, we then went to Skindred. I mean, what is there to say? They are absolute legends in that festival environment. Yeah. There's none better, really.
No.
And we did a deep cut of Babylon, but actually, I said at the time, I've not really kept in touch with a lot of their latter albums. And to be honest, I didn't really know the majority of the songs they were playing. They weren't familiar to me, other than the classic one or two that were dropped in. But almost you don't need to. They have that such great appeal. It's so easy to watch. Benji, absolute showman. They throw in all the classics, all the classic jokes. Newport Helicopter, the Black and Black. Everything you want. And yeah, I had a thoroughly good time to them too.
It's hard to, like, Benji is one of the most charismatic frontmen. It's hard to see anyone who really challenges him getting a crowd up like him.
Exactly. Next up on the Impericon was Bury Tomorrow, who I know you're not a big fan of, but South Coast metalcore, UK, forefront of that scene. Now, I'm a fan of theirs. I've seen them a number of times before. They've had the big body blow of losing Jason, who is their guitarist and melodic vocalist, and that in tandem with what I felt was a lukewarm release last year in their album Cannibal meant a set heavily drawing from that. So I felt their set list was poor. They didn't play many of their classics, unlike, a band like Funeral for a Friend know exactly what to do at that festival. I was actually a little bit disappointed. Maybe looking around at me, the pit was certainly frantic. There was a big crowd there, so I might be in the minority there, but I felt they've got a new rig guy, keyboards and melodic vocals to replace Jason, who did a good job, but it was not the same. I'm worried they are a star on the wane, I have to say.
What about Marty's Mine had it. What was his take on it, interestingly?
Same.
Oh, yeah?
I mean,
wow.
We probably biased each other by just talking about it. But yeah, he was the same. And yeah, I think they just lose a dimension without Jason. However good Danny is and his brother on bass, you know, they are really charismatic front people for the band. But I just think they lose something without Jason.
Okay, fair enough.
And last band that we saw before heading back to the tent was While She Sleeps. Now, I was really interested to see them. I heard amazing things from Download Pilot. A lot of people were saying they were the band of the weekend. I've been interested in them before, kind of This Is a Six, Brainwash kind of era, but not so much lately. They have changed their sound. You know, they're from a similar part of town to Bring Me the Horizon. They follow in a way a similar trajectory, although not quite so extreme in the pop way. But yeah, they were very bass and electronics heavy. The crowd, I mean, it was a home crowd for them in Leeds, and the crowd would go mad for it. But it was, it was good, but it was not quite for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it'd be wrong to say they were disappointing, but it wasn't quite what I was looking for from them. But yeah, they're really powerful in terms of their sound, very bass heavy. But yeah, good. So all in all, you know, really great to be back. I'd go to Slam Dunk again, honestly would. If the lineup was favourable, I mean, I don't think it always is, but if the lineup's favourable, it's a really nice one day, really good vibe, really good sight. The stage set up and everything else is really cool. So yeah.
I think any lineup that's favourable, you're going to be drawn towards, to be fair.
I think, to be honest, I think we'll, in the next 12 months, get a bit of fatigue from going back. So many bands will be wanting to tour and there'll be gigs every night, you know. So I think there will be a bit of fatigue coming in soon after being desperate to get back to live music. So, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, my last gig was supposed to be Behemoth in September. That's been cancelled now.
Knocked on the head, yeah.
So I'm all out of ideas. So I'm dying to get back to a gig soon as possible. Let's go on to some reviews, shall we, mate?
Let's.
So we're going to start off with Between the Buried and Me and Colours 2. And this is interesting because this Between the Buried and Me Colours, to an extent, was how we sort of started talking about making this podcast, because it would have been 3-4 years ago now at Download, where you and I, me living in Dublin, you living in Edinburgh, we flew down on the Thursday, or was it Friday? Can't remember. Flew down early, picked up the camper van, just you and I, set up the van. I think we had a couple of bacon sandwiches before you returned whatever you are now.
It must be a while ago.
Yeah. We had a couple of bacon sandwiches while waiting for the rest of them. And we had a couple of beers about 11 o'clock. And we sat there and did our top 20 albums of all time. And it was lovely just going back and forth and talking about. And that's sort of how this podcast started.
It was, mate. It was.
But anyway, the point is that Between the Buried and Me Colours is on my list of one of my favourite 20 albums of all time. And correct me if I'm wrong, Venny, you probably hadn't listened to Colours, but you probably would have listened to Between the Buried and Me before. Am I right in saying that?
Correct. Yeah. Absolutely spot on. So I'd know their latter stuff, but not Colours so much.
Yeah. So I asked you to do it, to listen to it. And I think, again, when you were still on Twitter, I think someone put on there about Colours being a good album. And you finally listened to it after their influence, not mine. But I'm not bitter about it. So, obviously, me going into this, with Colours being one of my favourite albums, and when they said they were doing Colours 2, there was obviously a bit of trepidation from my end about how it was going to turn out. And on first listen, I was satisfied. Definitely satisfied. As it goes on, we'll come to how I feel about it now. But going on to you, really, what's your take on it?
Mate, I'm dying to know what you think of this album. Given your history with the band and that first Colours album particularly, Between the Buried and Me, and an interesting one for me, by rights, they should be one of my favourite bands. They have all the elements that I love. They have that technicality, progressiveness. They've changed their sound. They had that pedigree of being a really quite heavy band back in the earlier days before moving on to proggier pastures. So by rights, they should be one of my favourite bands. And I really liked like the last Automata records, 1 and 2. I really liked the Coma Ecliptic. I really liked the Parallax Sequence 2, which not everyone did. So that's kind of my era Between the Buried and Me that I'm most familiar with and wasn't so much familiar with Colours. I don't know why, but they are not my favourite band. And I don't know why they've never fully clicked in. And maybe it will still happen in the future. It's very possible. I've definitely said that about bands before, and before it's clicked, Periphery being a good example. I was very nonplussed by them, but then and now really, really dig them. So yeah, and I'm not sure why. I don't know if the vocals have some part to do with that, but I'm not sure. But yeah, I was interested again, having listened to the last few, really liked what they've done for at least the last 4 or 5 albums, to see how it would relate to that previous work, which I knew about and knew was going to be a heavier strand. I'm happy to launch into what I think. Or
please, go ahead, mate. Yeah, fine.
Are you sure?
Yeah, fire away.
So the first thing to say is this is a very long album. This is an extremely long. Have you got the runtime, mate? It's
I don't. Let me have
78 minutes. But it is extremely long. And between The Buried and Me, they always have had an extremely technical sound. They have got extreme. They go between the extremes of heaviness, between more melodic passages, jazzy passages, kind of Oompa Loompa circus fairground passages. They salsa, they throw everything in. And for me, for an hour and 20 minutes, it was quite a lot to digest. And I found, therefore, and that's my big caveat, I found it really hard to review this album as a result. I found it really hard to lock in for the whole time because it was so much to take in.
Over to me, is it? Yeah, I agree. It's an hour and 20 minutes, and I was just looking there against the Periphery runtime of their last album, Hail Stan. That's an hour and 3 minutes, which was just trying to understand your attention span per se. I do agree it's a long album, and on first listen it was. And when you're trying to listen to a band like Between the Buried and Me, who are very technical, progressive, throwing loads of different genres, not just in the metal world, but like you touched on there, salsa and that, there is a lot going on to get your head around. That being said, these Between the Buried and Me are such a good band for me personally, and from Colours. It's an album that I love getting stuck into because I love hearing all these new pieces. I wondered when you were talking about why you didn't like Between the Buried and Me so much, whether it was the fact that they're potentially too progressive, potentially too much prog for you, which I could understand. I mean, you mentioned Periphery there. This album stood next to Between the Buried and Me. They're obviously both progressive, but Between the Buried and Me is a lot more, you know, the time signature changes. Periphery is more of a metal, full-on metal album, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt Between the Buried and Me throw an awful lot more to the canvas than Periphery and most other bands, to be honest. We reviewed Utopia, we talked about Dillinger. They're not quite as hardcore-y, scatty, mathy as that, but they throw a similar number of ideas onto the canvas. I'm interested to see what you think, but this Colours 2 is noticeably heavier, in my opinion, than the last 5 albums that they've released. Noticeably heavier. And my question to you is that good?
Well, I think Automata 2 was heavy. I do agree this is heavier, but Automata 2 still had that heaviness. I agree Coma Ecliptic was a lot more mellow. Yes, it is a good thing, because that's what Between the Buried and Me about. And I think what Between the Buried and Me have done on this album, they've said it themselves, is they never really knew where they fit as a band. And I think what they've just done now is they've just said, well, we're going to write what we want to write. And that is exactly what they've done on this album. They've said, you know, we're writing this for ourselves. Whatever the fans think, not two fingers up to them, but this is what we're writing. This is what Between the Buried and Me about. And I think from that perspective, you give them kudos because they're not bowing to anything. But I love this direction. Or not yeah. direction, sorry, but do you know what I mean? Where this album is at. Yeah.
One thing is funny, like metal fans of heavy music, you can never really win with them. Most bands that go towards a proggy direction, Opeth being a classic example, so many people say, oh, I wish you were just heavy like you were on Blackwater Park. I'm kind of saying the opposite here. And as I say, you can't please everyone. Almost the less heavy Between the Buried and Me got, and the more proggy they got, the more I like them. And I just find the heavy in this album a bit too heavy for me.
Okay.
For me. And it is heavy. The first three tracks, they come out of the gate super heavy. Like the Double Helix of Extinction is super heavy. Like there are kind of echoes of Periphery on that track. But they just throw the whole... Do you know?
And kitchen sink at it.
That absolutely. Kitchen sink and more. in Revolution and Limbo, just searing blast beats to start off with. And it actually takes a little... And Fix the Error carries on. It actually takes a little while for them to kind of pause for breath. And it is quite a frantic, really quite heavy opening. And I think my slight issue with it is, do you know, these aren't 3 minute really heavy tracks. These are 9 and 10 minute heavy tracks, and I just find it all a bit too much. And I'm trying to word this all very carefully because I've found this very difficult to review, and I've listened to it really a good number of times because I know it is one of those albums that the more you put in, the more you get out of it. You can latch on to little hooks that are buried deep down. So I've tried really hard, but I just find it all a bit too much.
Okay, that's fair enough. I think what you've said there is with the first three tracks, you know, being so heavy, this is not an entry point if you're trying to get into Between the Buried and Me, this album. I would definitely go on their earlier stuff to get a sense of what they're about. But I just want to talk about the track after Fix the Error, Never Seen, Future Shock. This is why I fell in love with this band, this song exactly. Tommy's vocals are some of the best in the business. The way he switches between the harsh growls to the melodics, and some of the melodic pitches he hits are, I would challenge anyone else to try and do that. And I've seen Between the Buried and Me live supporting Tesseract, or was it the other way around? And he can hit all that live as well. It's not just studio magic. He has got it in the bag. But also on that, you've got the hooky vocals, the wailing guitars on top. It is an absolutely flamboyant record. And at times we speak about bands who, you know, do solos for the sake of it, you know, and do things over the top. But I think Between the Buried and Me, because of the discography and how long they've been around, they have the right now to do that. Because collectively as musicians are up there, some of the best in the business, make no bones about it. Between the bassist is unbelievable, like the stuff he does. The two guitarists, Paul and his name escapes me now. And, you know, drumming alone is like, from a prog perspective, is probably up there in the top five of all time drummers. Such is the technicality and skill. And at the same time, they're just a really humble group of guys. You never see anything bad in the press about them. And I suppose in a way, well, definitely in this day and age where the cancel culture is so rife, and, you know, if someone in a band has, spat on the floor or something, you know, you can be cancelled. These guys, you never hear about that. And I think that sort of does draw as well my affection towards the band. But no, I do agree with you saying it is a very heavy record. It's certainly not for the faint-hearted to come into. You wouldn't certainly put this on a relaxing evening. But that's the beauty of Between the Buried and Me for me. And to just jump in straight with my rating, it's a very high eight. It would be a nine potentially come the end of the year. The one thing is the length that I do agree towards the end of the album, you sort of do find yourself slipping in and out and trying it hard to concentrate. But it also shows as well the strength of Colours One, if how good it is. Like,
yeah. I mean, and it's worth saying you are a bigger Between the Buried and Me fan. So I think that's really interesting coming from you. I mean, I agree. Never Seen Future Shock is my favourite track of the album. And I think it is because the heaviness relents a little bit by then. And you do see some other stuff. You see a really nice break, the kind of syncopated. And you've got that really nice guitar lead that runs through the whole track. So whilst there are the guitar solos, the bass solos, the drum solos in the
cowbells
in the 11, nearly 12 minute runtime, it does hold on to being a song. So what I would have liked is that song being the kind of centerpiece of the album. But my issue is that nearly all the other tracks are also centerpieces of the album because they're all a similar length. So yeah, I found, especially towards the end, it was all just, it almost was too much, like it was just too much for too long. But yeah, I agree with everything you say about the technicality. They're clearly amazing musicians. They're clearly nice guys. I've got no qualms at all with that. For me, I'm giving it a 7, and to be honest, like, that 7 is closer to a 6 than an 8. But it comes with a big caveat that I do think there is potential for this to really click and hit home with repeated listens. Right now, I cannot bear the thought of putting it on again. Because in reviewing it, I've tried so hard. Like, I've given it all my attention for a good number of times through. It is long, and I just... I can't bear the thought of putting it on again right now, but give it a month, give it 6 months, and it's got so much there to interest you that it could rise, but at the moment it's a 7.
I think that this album will click with you when you see the tracks live and picked out of this hour and 20 minute running length. That's where, certainly for me, when I saw them live and they played like stuff from Colours and Automata 2, I really, you know, owned in on those songs. And when you do sort of like them, it does make the album more palatable. So I think there's some absolute hidden gems in this album. So when they play it live, I think you probably will change your tune a bit. But look, we've agreed it's a lengthy album, but for me, it's a solid album and from one of my favourite bands. So that's Between the Buried and Me, and that is Colours 2, follow up to Colours 1, surprisingly. And we move on now to Death Heaven, and the album's called Infinite Granite. This is their fifth album, and it is from a band who released an album called Sunbather, which was absolutely colossal at the time, was critically acclaimed.
And I think it's get thrown back to that download conversation. I do wonder if that was, I think that probably was in my top 20 and something that I think I threw over to you at that point.
Potentially was.
So it's quite nice this show does feature. Do you know, this is a big show in terms of what in our world, in the heavy matters, do you know, the Joey Venny axis. These are
100%
our keystone band. So yeah, it's a, yeah. Like, carry on, mate. Sorry.
So, it's a good point. So somebody that, yeah, was one of those never judge a book by its cover, by its flowery cover. And I remember we were at Heavy Scotland, and I can't remember who we were watching, but one of them had a Sunbather t-shirt on, and it's so, you know, like tractor beam sucks you in with the inquisitiveness of it. And it's an absolutely brilliant album. Sunbather would be well up there among my favorite albums of all time, make no bones about it. And I absolutely love New Bermuda as well, which has one of my favorite songs in Blue Baby, something like that anyway. And then they released Ordinary Corrupt Human Love, and you sort of noticed a sway in direction from them. Now, we talk about this on the podcast a lot. Bands progress, And like we spoke about Between the Buried and Me there, they write what they want. You know, they're writing for them. So Def Heaven released Infinite Granite this year, and it was, the excitement levels on social media was unbelievable. Like I've never seen for a long time for an album being released. So Venny, you are definitely a bigger Def Heaven fan than I am. And I imagine we're going to be butting heads during this review.
Potentially, mate, potentially. Look, Def Heaven, if you were to put a genre on them, are this genre called black gaze. So clearly black metal, and back in the day, like you say, of Sunbather and New Bermuda, there was plenty of black metal. But even during those times, they brought something new. Instead of that icy Northern European chill, they brought a warmth and a technicolor, and instead of being composed in the minor key, which is quite frosty and discordant, they compose in the major key, which is much warmer, and instead of feeling negative, can make you feel quite positive. And that was a big thing with Death Heaven and Sunbather for me, just hearing something just familiar but very different, and something really warm and powerful and uplifting instead of kind of depressive. So yeah, that was is a major thing. The gaze denotes shoegaze. That is a genre of British music from the early 90s, bands like Slow Dive, and essentially in the indie world, shoegaze, so called because the bands used to just stand on stage playing their guitars, looking down at their feet for the whole time. And yeah, we're talking here about kind of Slow Dive, My Bloody Valentine, that kind of thing. And that is a more ethereal, more indie kind of sound. And in being black gaze, Def Heaven have always had that in their sound. But what was clear before is they have more metal. And what is clear now is they have less metal and more of the shoegaze element. And that was, like you said, very much signposted on the last album. And you saw they were going through this bit of a transition. I'd be interested to hear what you thought of that last album. But now the kind of transition is complete. And is this the final destination of the band? Who knows? What is very clear over the years are they are very antagonistic. They were berated at the time of releasing Sunbather for being a hipster band, didn't belong in the black metal world. Do you know, how can they have a flowery pink cover? Do you know, where is the guy in corpse paint in black and white, do you know, in the forest somewhere? Like, they were absolutely derided, told not to be part of our scene and everything else. And now they've been antagonistic again and changing their sound away from the heaviness. And the same guys probably are saying, oh, well, why aren't you heavy anymore? So, I fully respect the band for their change in sound. Whether it's to everyone's taste, we're about to hear.
We are about to hear. Look, from the start, kudos to bands when they do this. Like, there's no, you know, they're the ones who write the music. Whether you like the music or not is up to you. But when bands do this and change from such a style like Sunbather into this album, which we're going to talk about, I do tip my hat and say, you know, that they're doing what they want to do. And again, not two fingers up to the fans, but you like it or you won't. You mentioned there about them being less metal on this album. I mean, there's no metal on this album. Really, sorry. I caveat that with what I'll come back to in a minute. But yeah, we listened to Lance Loss two or three weeks ago on the show. And this had exactly the same impact on me when I first put it on. Now, Lance Loss grew on me. This album, Death Heaven, I'm having a really hard time. It's a real Marmite album for me. Some days I'll put it on and I'll be like, this is what I am in the mood for now. Other times I'm like, please turn this, I have to turn this off. I can't get through it. Really? And that is my relationship with the album at the moment. I find it really hard when bands go this much of a direction, a change. We talked about Bring Me the Horizon at one point when they went from Sempiternal into what was that album called?
That's the Spirit.
That's the Spirit, and the one after that was a big change. And it was too much of a change. I should have read between the lines on this one. Like you said, it was signposted in their previous album, but it just went a bit too far for me. It's, you say shoegaze, this is more pop gaze for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's like an indie album, really.
It is, yeah.
We are not here to review indie albums, but for me, well, I agree with everything you've said. I really respect bands when they change up their sound, and they are doing what they want at the end of the day and what their creative energies tell them to do. And you are right, they have stripped back the heaviness, the metal, call it what you will, almost entirely. Do you mean this is now essentially an indie, shoegazy pop album? I think the key thing for me was George's vocals previously were screamed, acerbic, caustic vocals, whereas now he's slipped into a completely different melodic croon. It almost sounds a bit like Morrissey from the Smiths in a way, that quite deep croon, which I'm actually surprised he can do. He's actually a very good singer. I thought part of the reason that he screamed so much was because he couldn't sing, but he clearly can sing very well. I think the parallels with Lantlos are very valid because they too came from a black metal world and have completely changed up their sound to a poppier, more mainstream, more, you know, melodic aspect. And I agree that Lantlos is very much a shimmering, shiny, summer, upbeat, has that dream pop element, whereas this has more, it's more introspective, it's a bit kind of gloomier, it doesn't lift you up. And I wonder if that is kind of what you were getting at when you were saying about the moods being quite key. And when you're listening to it, it is a little bit kind of just a bit drearier. It doesn't have that sunlight blasting through like Lantlos did.
I think that's exactly it, mate. That it's, well, you've said it all there. I'm not going to repeat it, but yeah, it is a gloomier piece of music. And I mean, it's quite ironic me, you know, loving black metal, which is notoriously gloomy at times, and saying I can't get my head around this one. I know obviously the comparisons are a lot different between the two, but I think it's just the fact that it is more of a pop album or indie album, as you said, that I just can't get my head around. Now, that being said, you did mention the vocals, and I 100% agree. He's got a great set of pipes on him when he's doing these songs. I just want to, before I finish up my piece, I just want to touch on the song Mombasa.
Yes.
Because that was the one that piqued my attention, because probably it has the harsher vocals at the end. But I was sitting here whenever I was listening to it, and I thought this would be just lovely to see in a live environment. You could, you know, just sat there with a beer, no mosh pit or anything, and just, you know, and then it's a nice switch up into the heavy vocals. And I wonder, you said earlier about whether this is the way Death Heaven are moving into this new territory. And I listened to this and I thought, well, I wonder if this is them giving us a sign that they're going to move back to that territory. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Last track on the album, basically no heaviness for the whole way through. And then, like you say, just as the album's finishing off, they put in this little tantalising little nugget for those fans of, you know, the heavy aspect. I think what I love when bands do this is, you know, they go into these softer realms, but you know where they've come from. You know there is that threat of heaviness at any time, and they could all of a sudden just switch into blistering blast beats and tremolos and harsh vocals. But they haven't so much on this album, but they do on that last track. And I think it is a nice little reminder. And I agree. Maybe it is a signpost to where they go next. I just wanted to highlight a couple of the tracks. I loved the gnashing. I just think it's got a really sweet, beautiful chorus with a really nice reverb guitars. They're just slightly up the pace on that track, which I think is important. But yeah, I think that's the best track on the album. Lament for Wasps is really good. Some really nice understated synths. It does sound a bit Smithsy and the Great Mass of Colour as well. But yeah, Mombasa, I think, like you say, is just a really interesting final track. Don't always say that about last tracks, but it's really interesting.
Read into that what you will. Okay, your shout, mate.
Yeah, this is a 7 out of 10 for me. I really like it. I really like listening to it. I say this all the time, a really good late night album to listen to. I've seen Def Heaven play a few times live, and what was always quite clear to me is they are really incredible musicians, and you can see them always, you know, when you see some bands, they are playing at their limit, they're doing what they do, you know, straight ahead, that is their limit, whereas you can tell with Def Heaven there's a bit more to them. So yeah, look, I really like where they've gone with this. Would I like them to stay here? Probably not, but I really like this album, and I think I'll continue to listen to it. 7 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, I do wonder how these songs are going to fit into their future set list, but I think they're a band who probably could pull it off, and they would work it in there somehow. It's a 7 from me, mate. And
all right.
Yeah, now, if I was looking at this personally and selfishly, it would be a 6.
Because yes.
I would probably not play this album again, I don't think. Maybe I would, maybe. It depends on how I feel. But from a collective and musical point of view, it is the musicianship's still there. You can tell it's a good album that is going to please a lot of fans. So for me, it's a 7, yeah.
After the battle lines being drawn, coming out with the same score, I would not have guessed
that. I know.
But I think the devil's in the detail of what we've discussed. But yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
good,
sure.
Good stuff, mate.
That was Def Heaven, Infinite Granite. And now, last but not least, by any means, we're moving on to our third review. And this is by Wolves in the Throne Room. The album's called Primordial Arcana. It's their 7th album. For those who are not aware, Wolves in the Throne Room are one of the most respected black metal bands in North America, for sure. Brothers Aaron and Nathan are the main driving force behind it. And this band have been one of my favourites in the genre for a long, long time. Further backed up by the fact when I saw them supporting Behemoth in Dublin, where the live show is more of a ritual than it is a music show. And when we spoke about me going into Between the Buried and Me and the trepidation of following up on Colours 2, this was completely the opposite of me when I was going into this Wolves in the Throne Room, because I know exactly what we're going to get from Wolves in the Throne Room, and they did not disappoint. On that note, I'll hand it to you to have a few. But
yeah, I've got a good relationship with Wolves in the Throne Room as well. Like you say, the leaders of the North American black metal scene, and what has punctuated their music over the years is a really rich sense of atmosphere. And again, it's a slightly different one to the frozen forests of Norway. It's just brings a very different take for me on black metal, and something that really chimed with me. I loved Celestial Passages, is I think they're
Celestial Lineage.
But Thrice Woven, I thought, was really a really special album. And I think that featured in my albums of the year last year. I've seen them a couple of times on that same Behemoth tour, but I was lucky enough to see them at their own show in a tiny venue in Edinburgh. Mm. And they were really, really good there. And I think the pervading word that I would always associate with Wolves is atmosphere. Just that ability to conjure up an atmosphere, and they have layers of kind of synth and everything else that runs through the music to build that. It's not always just a scratchy sound that you sometimes just get with black metal. It is that atmosphere. And I'm interested to hear what you think, but I think there is a big difference in this album and the last album in terms of that atmosphere, but also the production values and everything else. I'm interested, as the resident BM expert, to see what you think about that.
I think the production, like you've touched on, is definitely not improved. I don't think improved is the right word, but there is an uplift in the production. I think you're right. The one thing I will say, and not to disagree with you to an extent, but Wolves in the Throne Room will always stick to their values in terms of what they're writing. They're a very, you know, they're not a modern metal band in terms of the equipment they use. They use older, amps to record because they think it gives it more of a earthy atmospheric sound. But yeah, I do understand what you mean. And even by looking at the album cover, you can feel that sense of
richness.
Is exactly the word, mate. Yeah.
I felt strongly that whilst there are some nods to the traditional black metal lo-fi production, particularly with some of the kind of as tracks intro, like Primal Chasm is the one I'm thinking of, comes in with those horns and that snare drum roll, which is really lo-fi. When actually the music kicks in, the guitars and the bass sound really rich and deep and well produced. So I think this album is towards an upper echelon or upper end of production for a black metal record. And I do think that is a change up for them. And I don't know if the circumstances, I believe they did record a lot of this themselves. And I do wonder if that has changed their style a little bit. But as I say, I will bow to your superior knowledge on this.
You mentioned Primal Chasm there. And so I have to go back onto it now you've said it. This is what I love about black metal. This whole track is, I mean, you could argue over the horns in there as the samples being, but I love the way the horns kick off. It's like a call to arms. And then you have everything in there. You have the tremolo blast beats, but then it brings you down into a nice melodic, 4-4 drum beat section with lovely galloping double bass. And this song, just for me, could be my black metal song of the year.
Really?
Because of that. Yeah, it's so good. But production aside, they don't stray far from the template they've used, like on Thrice Woven, which was on my one of my albums of 2017. They still have that majestic mysteriousness about it. You know, the keys or synths when they come in, the album still flows in that way. That I think is a proven template. And I just think that this band, regardless of whatever they're doing, you know, they do stick to their roots. Unlike we talked about Death Amben earlier, they really strain from that black gaze, black metal template, whereas Wolves have, for me, stayed strong. And that's why I had no trepidation going into this album, because I knew what I was going to be coming in for.
Yeah. I'm inclined to agree. I think there's really nice use of synth on here. In the first track, Mountain Magic, which is one of my favourites, I really like the Eastern infused keys on Spirit of Lightning, second track. And like the last track, Isotra.
Something like that. Yeah.
It's a really nice kind of just a synth-led track. And I don't know if you ever listened to the Celestial Light album, which was a really weird, like, it's almost like a completely different, it was just synth. It was a synth-based album. There was no black metal.
Oh, sorry, Celestite.
Yeah. And I always used to play that at bedtimes, and it'd be like, my wife would be like, what is this, like, massage parlour music that you're playing? And I'd be like, oh, no, it's Wolves in the Throne Room. They're like a extreme black metal band. Darling, this is extreme black metal. What are you talking about? She'd be like, it sounds like a massage parlor. But
we're happy endings.
All right, mate. Lower the tone.
Sorry. your wife we're talking about. Sorry, Rebecca, if you're listening.
But yeah, I really like that synth. For me, if you were looking at the two bar chart and there were two bars in it, one was atmospherics and the second bar was black metal. Normally for me, the atmospheric bar is slightly higher than the black metal bar. And on this album, it's changed slightly the other way. And part of the reason I love Wolves is the atmosphere and the slightly different nature that it has. So I'll jump in. I really like this album. And like you say, I think it's a very safe album. I don't like it as much as Thrice Woven, but I still am still giving it a 7 out of 10. So I think the quality of it is very high.
Ooh, Jesus. That's a 3 sevens for you this week, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Difficult week.
I think vocally Nathan sounds outstanding on this. From a black metal fan and from taking a black metal vocal approach, he sounds fucking phenomenal, which is always a plus for me. Is it better than Thrice Woven? I think time will tell. I think as we sit here now, I couldn't definitely say yes. But what I am looking forward to is I'm looking forward to getting this on vinyl and spinning it at night. And, you know, when the winter comes in, I think that's really where you're going to get the benefit. We go back again to, like, Between the Buried and Me, when you see their stuff live. I think the proof will be in the pudding when you see these tracks live. And they've got some apps. I mean, personally, I'm not a fan of this whole bands playing albums front to back, you know, going back. But I think,
yeah.
I mean, Walls in the Throne Room, you could probably take any of their albums, play it front to back, be great. But I really think with this new one, it will be something very special to see live all the way through. But even if they do pick out tracks here and there, again, they're going to have a fantastic set list. And for me, this album's an 8. Probably comes no surprise. But I would be very surprised that come the year, you know, with 3 months left until we do our albums of the year, I'd be very surprised if this isn't really high up there after giving it a lot more listens. I mean, this year's been particularly tough because we're getting so much stuff thrown at us that we're listening that we can't really give it the full attention as we would have maybe 2 years ago. But it's a nice dilemma to have. And yeah, I mean, that's it. An 8 for me, and I can't wait to see him live again.
Yeah. I think this was a really big week in terms of three really big bands that, as I say, are important to each of us in their own ways. Do you know, often they're more of a you band or more of a me band, but these three bands mean something to both of us. And there's been a mixed bag of reactions to all three albums in the press, so I think it was a really interesting show. And I don't think our scores really deviated that much, but I think just our perspectives, yeah, it was an interesting show, I think, for me.
Yeah, definitely. So we have, well, we hope you enjoyed the Mastiff interview that is out, me chatting with Jim. On our next release on Monday, we are going to be interviewing Sammy and Justine from Woking's Employed to Serve, which was a great time. We had a lovely time, didn't we, mate?
We did. They were a great company. Yeah.
Yeah, really nice. We talked about the new album, them dressing up in costumes, pooing in mosh pits. So that was always interesting. And then on the next podcast, we'll be looking at albums from, well, mine and your, if any, favourite band of all time, Iron Maiden. And we're going to also be reviewing the new Employed to Serve album. So it's a double whammy, but there's going to be lots to talk about on that show. So you can catch us on Twitter and Instagram at heavy_matters. We have a website, www.heavymatters.co.uk, you can check out. But thank you for listening. We don't say it often enough, but thank you for tuning in and listening to us. It means the world to us, two little lads from a little shire in Dorset. We appreciate everyone tuning in. So until next time, peace out. Benny, I'll talk to you soon.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate.